At the corner of West Fayette and Geta Street sits a nondescript old factory or warehouse building. I go by it several times a week on my way home. I've been keeping my eye on it for several years, ever since I learned that it was being converted into a haven for young local artists and their studios. Over the past week, something new has appeared on that building. A long blackboard that wraps around the front of the building and then down one long side, 170 feet in length in total, has been painted by the artist there. On the blackboard are written the words, "Before I die, I want to," and then a blank line waiting to be filled in. Over and over and over again, those words are written, perhaps, I suppose, as many as 200 different times and 200 different spaces, inviting passersby to stop, reflect on, and write down one of their lifelong dreams. Pieces of chalk are scattered around the site, furthering the message that the wall is intended as an interactive piece of public art. Syracusans of all ages have raced to fill in the blanks, treating the project as an open-air, low-tech version of Facebook on steroids. Here are some of the things that people have written in those spaces waiting to be filled. Before I die, I want to hug a whale, have a family, make a difference, fall in love, get married, visit Ireland, finish my novel, bungee jump, go to the NBA, slay dragons, talk to penguins, be the man I should be known. I went by this morning just to check. There's space for you to add your own version. Almost 500 years ago to the day, a young pastor and biblical scholar performed a similar kind of public art, scrawling his latest thinking in a public setting for all to see and read and debate. In those days, before book publishers, photocopy machines, and the internet, it was the custom for academics to post their thesis publicly, not as an act of defiance or dissent, but as a way of inviting conversation and dialogue with their ideas. And so the young Catholic priest named Martin Luther tacked his theses, all 95 of them, on the church door for all to note. As with almost all significant events, that iconic moment was neither the beginning nor the ending of what we now call the Protestant Reformation, the great rupture or schism that has shaped and defined so much of Western Christianity to this very day. Luther, like reformers before and after him, called the church back to its simple roots, stripping it of all the unnecessary, unhealthy baggage it had acquired over time, slowly but surely shifting the focus to itself instead of on the simple, clear, life-altering message of Jesus. Historian and theologian Phyllis Tickle suggests that about every 500 years it happens that the Christian church holds a great rummage sale, clearing out its attic of unwanted, outdated items in order to center once more on the unadorned and undeniable good news of Jesus. 500 years ago, the rummage sale was spearheaded by Martin Luther and the Protestant Reformation. 500 years before that, it had been the separation between the Eastern or Orthodox Church, headquartered in Constantinople, and the Western Church, headquartered in Rome. And 500 years before that, it had been the rise of the monastic movement, decentralizing and thus salvaging Christianity at the very time that Rome and its power and authority were falling apart. From one angle, these 500-year junctions look like the splintering or fragmenting of the institutional church. But from another angle, these same junctions can be seen as points at which the church experienced new life, new vitality, new energy, new growth. From the first angle, it looks like an eroding of power. From the second, it is a sharing and diversifying of power. It all depends on where you stand and how you look at it. In the same way, the Apostle Paul can be seen in two ways as the architect of a codified and regimented legalistic, moralistic Christianity, or as a Johnny Appleseed traveling far and wide to spread the message of salvation, God's saving love, rooted solely in the utter grace of God as made known by Jesus of Nazareth. Nearing the end of his life, Paul sums things up this way. My time is running out and will soon be over. I've done everything I could. From here on, it's all up to God. Which, of course, it's always been anyway. Even when I was all alone and under attack, God stood by me and never abandoned me. God gave me strength and preserved me to spread the good news of Jesus. Whatever you do, give God the credit and the glory. These are not the words of a fire-breathing Paul, ready to pounce on every would-be opponent, but a gentler, calmer, reflective Paul at the close of life, eager for companionship and mindful of possessions he had left behind on the way. Come see me soon, my dear Timothy, he writes. And please bring Mark with you. I want to see both of you one more time. Oh, and bring me the coat I left behind, my winter coat that I left in Troas, and my books, and most of all, my letters and writing materials. Please try to get here before winter. There's no one left. Demas, Crescens, Titus, Erastus, Trophimus, they're all gone. Please say hi to Prisca and Aquila for me. Eubulus, Pudens, Linus, Claudia all send their love, as does everyone else. God's grace be with you always. I'm reminded of words that Paul writes elsewhere. We are hemmed in by trouble on every side, but we are not crushed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. We are persecuted, but not forsaken. We are knocked down, but not destroyed. You can have your Paul, the Paul who silences women and who bars homosexuals from heaven, along, by the way, with drunks and thieves and adulterers and swindlers and those who covet and those who are greedy, those who have sex without being married, those who worship other gods, those who worship anyone or anything other than our definition of God. You can have that, Paul. I'll take the Paul who has grown older and wiser, and who has allowed the grace of God, the grace and love and mercy of God that he has preached about for so long and with such passionate conviction, he has allowed that grace to seep into his own soul and flesh and heart. That's the Paul I want to hang out with and get to know. Because if it can happen to Paul, it can happen to me. And it can happen to you. I don't know about you, but I don't want to just preach about God's love and grace and mercy. And I don't want to just hear about God's grace and love and mercy. I want those things to grab hold of me and permeate every part of my life, so that salvation and wholeness and forgiveness are not just nice-sounding words and ideas, not just hope-for possibilities, but the air I breathe and the ground I walk on, the blood that flows through me and the name I answer to. That's what I want. What about you? Picture yourself alongside Paul at the end of your days, writing a letter about the people and places and life lessons that have been most important to you. What would you want that letter to say? What would you want that letter to reveal about you, to stand as a legacy for you? Or picture yourself at the corner of Geddes and West Fayette, in front of an open blackboard with the words, "Before I die, I want to..." How will you finish that sentence? How will you make it happen? May the grace of God be yours. May the grace of God ooze over you, get under your skin, fill you up, and transform your life for good.